In the 150th anniversary year of his birth, RTE radio drama commemorates the genius of George Bernard Shaw in the last of four archive productions.
We now present Candida by George Bernard Shaw.
A fine morning in October 1894, in the northeast quarter of London, a vast district miles away from the London of Mayfair and St. James's, and much less narrow, squalid, fetid, and airless in its slums. The best view of Victoria Park is commanded by the front window of St. Dominic's Parsonage, from which not a brick is visible. The parsonage is semi-detached, with a front garden and a porch. Upstairs, on the level of the hall door, is the drawing room, with its large plate-glass window looking out on the park. In this, the only sitting room that can be spared from the children and the family meals, the parson, the Reverend James Mavor Morell, does his work. He is sitting in a strong, round-backed, revolving chair at the end of a long table, which stands across the window, so that he can cheer himself with a view of the park over his left shoulder. At the opposite end of the table, adjoining it, is a little table only half as wide as the other, with a typewriter on it. His typist, Miss Proserpine Garnet, is clattering away busily at her machine, whilst Morell opens the last of his morning's letters.
Another lecture?
Yes. The Hoxton Freedom Group want me to address them on Sunday morning. What are they?
Communist anarchists, I think.
Just like anarchists, not to know that they can't have a parson on Sunday. Tell them to come to church if they want to hear me. We'll do them good. Say I can come on Mondays and Thursdays only. Have you the diary there?
Yes.
Have I any lecture on for next Monday?
Tower Hamlets Radical Club.
Well, Thursday then.
English Land Restoration League.
What next?
Guild of St. Matthew on Monday. Independent Labour Party Greenwich Branch on Thursday. Monday, Social Democratic Federation, Mile End Branch. Thursday, first confirmation class. Oh, I'd better tell them you can't come. They're only half a dozen ignorant and conceited costermongers without 5 shillings between them.
Ah, but you see, they are near relatives of mine.
Relatives of yours?
Yes, we have the same father in heaven.
Oh, is that all?
You don't believe it. Everybody says it. Nobody believes it. Nobody. Well, come, Miss Proserpine, can't you find a date for the Custers? What about the 25th? That was a vacant date before yesterday.
Engaged to the Fabian Society.
Bother the Fabian Society. Is the 28th gone too?
City dinner. You're invited to dine with the Founders Company.
That'll do. I'll go to the Hoxton Group of Freedom instead. Well, Lexi, late again, as usual.
I'm afraid so. I wish I could get up in the morning.
Watch and pray, Lexi. Watch and pray.
I know, but how can I watch and pray when I'm asleep? Isn't that so, Miss Prossy?
Miss Garnet, if you please.
I beg your pardon, Miss Garnet.
You've got to do all the work today.
Why?
Never mind why. It will do you good to earn your supper before you eat it for once in a way, as I do. Come now, don't dawdle. You should have been off on your rounds half an hour ago.
Is she in earnest, Morell?
Yes, I am going to dawdle today.
You don't know how.
Don't I? I'm going to have this morning all to myself. My wife's coming back. She's due here at 11:45.
Coming back already? With the children? I thought they were to stay to the end of the month.
So they are. She's only coming up for 2 days to get some flannel things for Jimmy and to see how we're getting on without her.
But, my dear Morell, if what Jimmy and Fluffy had was scarlatina, do you think it was?
Scarlatina? Rubbish. It was German measles. I brought it into the house myself from the Pycroft Street School. A parson is like a doctor, my boy. He must face infection like a soldier must face bullets. Catch the measles if you can, Lexi. She'll nurse you. And what a piece of luck that'll be for you, eh?
It's so hard to understand you about Mrs. Morell.
Ah, my boy, get married to a good woman, and then you'll understand. This is a foretaste of what will be best in the kingdom of heaven we are trying to establish on earth. That will cure you of dawdling. An honest man feels that he must pay heaven for every hour of happiness with a good spell of hard, unselfish work to make others happy. We have no more right to consume happiness without producing it than to consume wealth without producing it. Get a wife like my Candida, and you'll always be in arrear with your repayment.
Oh, wait a bit. I forgot. Your father-in-law is coming around to see you.
Mr. Burgess?
Yes. I passed him in the park arguing with somebody. He asked me to let you know that he was coming.
But he hasn't called here for 3 years. You sure, Lexi? You're not joking, are you?
No, sir, really.
Time for him to take another look at Canada before she grows out of his knowledge.
Ah, what a good man. What a thorough loving soul he is.
Oh, a man ought to be able to be fond of his wife without making a fool of himself about her.
Oh, Miss Prossy.
Canada here, Canada there, Canada everywhere. It's enough to drive anyone out of their senses to hear a woman raved about in that absurd manner, merely because she's got good hair and a tolerable figure.
I think her extremely beautiful, Miss Garnet. Extremely beautiful. How fine her eyes are.
Her eyes are not one bit better than mine, no. And you know very well you think me dowdy and second-rate enough.
Heaven forbid that I should think of any of God's creatures in such a way.
Thank you. That's very nice and comforting.
I had no idea you had any feelings against Mrs. Morell.
I have no feelings against her. She's very nice, very good-hearted. I'm very fond of her, and can appreciate her real qualities far better than any man can. You don't believe me? You think I'm jealous? Oh, what a knowledge of the human heart you have, Mr. Lexi Mill. How well you know the weaknesses of woman, don't you? It must be nice to be a man and have penetrating intellect instead of mere emotions like us. And you know the reason we don't share your amorous delusions is that we're all jealous of one another.
Ah, if you women had only the same clue to man's strength that you have to his weakness, Miss Prossy, there would be no woman question.
Where did you hear that? Morell? You didn't invent that yourself. You're not clever enough.
That's quite true. I'm not ashamed of owing him that, as I owe him so many other spiritual truths. He said it at the annual conference of the Women's Liberal Federation. Allow me to add that though they did not appreciate it, I, a mere man, did.
Well, when you talk to me, give me your own ideas, such as they are, and not his. You never cut a poorer figure than when you're trying to imitate him.
Thank you. Ah, Mr. Burgess.
They told me Mr. Morell was here.
Oh, I'll fetch him for you.
You're not the same young lady as used to typewrite for him.
No.
No, she was younger. Oh, starting on your rounds, Mr. Mill.
Yes, I must be off presently.
Oh, don't let me detain you, Mr. Mill. What I come about is private, between me and Mr. Morell.
I have no intention of intruding, I'm sure, Mr. Burgess. Good morning.
Oh, good morning to you.
Off to work?
Yes, sir.
Take my silk handkerchief and wrap your throat up. There's a cold wind. Away with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Spoiling your curates as usual, James. When I pay a man and his living depends on me, I keep him in his place.
I always keep my curates in their places as my helpers and comrades. If you get as much work out of your clerks and warehouse men as I do out of my curates, you must be getting rich pretty fast. Will you take your old chair?
Oh, you're just the same as ever, James.
When you last called, it was about 3 years ago, I think you said the same thing, a little more frankly. Your exact words then were, just as big a fool as ever, James.
Perhaps I did, but I meant no offence by it. A clergyman is privileged to be a bit of a fool, you know. Well, it's only becoming in his profession that he should. Anyhow, I come here not to rake up old differences, but to let bygones be bygones. Now, James, 3 years ago you done me an ill turn. You done me out of a contract, and when I gave you harsh words, it were in my natural disappointment, you turned my daughter agin me. Well, I've come to act the part of a Christian. I forgive you, James.
Confound your impudence.
Oh, now is that becoming language for a clergyman, James? And you so particular, too.
No, sir, it is not becoming language for a clergyman. I used the wrong word. I should have said, damn your impudence. That's what St. Paul or any other honest priest would have said to you. Do you think I have forgotten that tender of yours for the contract to supply clothing to the workhouse?
I acted in the interest of the ratepayers. It was the lowest tender, you can't deny that.
Yes, the lowest, because you paid worse wages than any other employer. Starvation wages, aye, worse than starvation wages, to the women who made the clothing. Your wages would have driven them to the streets to keep body and soul together. Those women were my parishioners. I shamed the guardians out of accepting your tender. I shamed the ratepayers out of letting them do it. I shamed everybody but you. How dare you, sir, come here and offer to forgive me and talk about your daughter
easy,
and...
James, easy. Don't get into a fluster about nothing. I've owned I was wrong.
Have you? I didn't hear you.
Of course I did. I own it now. Come, I ask your pardon for the letter I wrote you. Now, is that enough?
That's nothing. Have you raised the wages?
Yes.
What?
I've turned a model employer. I don't employ no women now. They're all sacked. And the work is done by machinery. Not a man has less than 6 pence an hour, and the skilled hands gets the trade union rate. Now, what have you to say to me now?
Is it possible? Well, there's more joy in heaven over one sinner that repented. Oh, my dear Burgess, how splendid of you. I most heartily beg your pardon for my hard thoughts. And now, don't you feel the better for the change? Come, confess. You're happier. You look happier.
Well, perhaps I do. Oh, suppose I must, since you notice it. Well, at all events, I get me contracts accepted by the county council. Oh, they doesn't have nothing to do with me unless I paid fair wages. Curse them for a parcel of meddling fools.
So that was why you raised the wages.
Well, why else should I do it? Now, what does it lead to but drink and uppishness and working men? Oh, it's all very well for you, James. It gets you into the papers and makes a great man of you. But you never think of the harm you do, putting money in the pockets of working men, and they don't know how to spend it.
What is your business with me this morning? I shall not pretend to believe that you're here merely out of family sentiment.
Oh, yes, I am. Just family sentiment, nothing else.
I don't believe you.
Now, don't say that to me again, James Marva Morell.
Well, I'll say it just as often as may be necessary to convince you that it is true. I don't believe you.
Oh, well, if you're determined to be unfriendly, well, I suppose I'd better go. Oh, I didn't expect to find an unforgiving spirit in you, James. We used to get on well enough, spite of our different opinions. Why are you so changed to me? I give you my word. I come here in pure friendliness, not wishing to be on bad terms with my own daughter's husband. Come, James, be a Christian, shake hands.
Look here, Burgess. Do you want to be as welcome here as you were before you lost that contract?
Oh, I do, James. I do, honest.
Then why don't you behave as you did then?
Well, how do you mean?
I'll tell you. You thought me a young fool then.
Ah, no, I didn't.
Yes, James. You did. And I thought you an old scoundrel.
Oh, no, you didn't, James. Now you do. You're self-fooling, James.
Yes, I did. Well, that did not prevent our getting on very well together. God made you what I call a scoundrel, as he made me what you call a fool. It's not for me to quarrel with his handiwork in the one case more than in the other. So long as you come here honestly, as a self-respecting, thorough, convinced scoundrel, justifying your scoundrelism and proud of it, you are welcome. But I won't have you here snivelling about being a model employer and a converted man when you're only an apostate with your coat turned for the sake of the county council contract. No, I like a man to be true to himself, even in wickedness. Come now, either you take your hat and go, or else sit down and give me a good scoundrelly reason for wanting to be friends with me.
Well, you are a strange bird, James, no mistake. But one can't help liking you. Besides, as I said before, of course, one don't take all a clergyman says seriously, or the world couldn't go on, could it now? Well, I don't mind telling you, since it's your wish we should be free with one another, I did think you were a bit of a fool once, but I'm beginning to think that perhaps I was behind the times a bit.
You're finding that out at last, are you?
Yeah, well, times has changed more than I could have believed. Well, 5 years ago, no sensible man would have thought of taking up your ideas. Now, I used to wonder you was that preach at all. Why, you know, I knew a clergyman what has been kept out of his job for years by the Bishop of London. Although the poor fellow's not a bit more religious than you are. But today, if anyone was to offer to bet me £1,000 that you'll end up by being the bishop yourself, I doesn't take the bet. You and your crew are getting influential. I can see that. Oh, they'll have to give you something someday, if it's only to stop your mouth. Oh, you had the right instinct after all, James. That line you took is the paying line in the long run for a man of your sort.
Shake hands, Burgess. Now you're talking honestly. I don't think they'll make me a bishop, but if they do, I'll introduce you to the biggest jobbers I can get to come to my dinner party.
You will have your joke, James. Our quarrel is made up now, ain't it?
Say yes, James.
Oh, okay.
Candida! Why, James, darling! I intended to meet you at the train. I let the time slip. I was so engrossed by...
How are you, Candy?
Very well, Papa.
James and me has come to an understanding, an honourable understanding.
Oh?
Ain't we, James?
Oh, by your understanding, you've kept me late for Canada. My poor love, how did you manage the luggage? How did you find...
There. I wasn't alone. Eugene has been down with us and we travelled together.
Eugene?
Yes, he's struggling with my luggage, poor boy. Go out there at once or he'll pay for the cab, and I don't want that.
Oh, no, of course not.
Well, Papa, how are you getting on at home?
Oh, the house ain't worth living in since you left it, Candy. Oh, I wish you'd come down and give the girl a talking to. Who's this Eugene that's come with you?
Oh, Eugene is one of James's discoveries. He found him sleeping on the embankment last June. Haven't you noticed our new picture? He gave us that.
God, you want to tell me, your own father, that cab touts or such like off the embankment buys pictures like that? Now, don't deceive me, Candy. It's a high church picture, and James chose it himself.
Guess again. Eugene isn't a cab tout.
Oh, then what is he? A nobleman, I suppose.
Yes, his uncle's a peer. A real live earl.
No.
Yes. He had a 7-day bill for £55 in his pocket when James found him on the embankment. He thought he couldn't get any money until the 7 days were up and was too shy to ask for credit. Oh, he's a dear boy. We're very fond of him.
Oh, I thought you wouldn't get an earl's nephew visiting Victoria Park unless he were a bit fat. Of course, I don't hold with that picture, Candy. But still, it's high class. First-rate work of art, I can see that. Now, be sure you introduce me to him, Candy. I can only stay about 2 minutes.
Come along, Eugene. This is my father-in-law, Mr. Burgess, Mr. Marchbanks.
Glad to meet you, sir.
Glad to meet you, I'm sure, Mr. Marchbanks. Well, how do you find yourself this weather? Hope you ain't letting James put no foolish ideas into your head.
Foolish ideas? Oh, you mean socialism?
Yes, sir.
No.
Well, I must go now. There's no help for it. Yeah. Well, you're not coming my way, are you, Mr. Marchbanks?
Which way is that?
Victoria Park Station. There's a city train at 12:25.
Nonsense. Eugene will stay to lunch with us, I expect.
No.
I shan't press you. I bet you'd rather lunch with Candy. Now, some night, I hope you'll come and dine with me at my club. The Freeman Founders in Norton Felgett. Now, come, say you will. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Burgess. Where is Norton Felgett? Down in Surrey, isn't it?
You'll lose your train, Papa, if you don't go at once. Come back in the afternoon and tell Mr. Marchbanks where to find the club.
Down in Surrey? Oh, that's not a bad one. Well, I never met a man who didn't know Norton Felgett before. Goodbye, Mr. Marchbanks. I know you're too high-bred to take my pleasantry in bad part.
Not at all.
Bye-bye, Candy. I'll look in again later on. So long, James.
Must you go?
No, don't stay.
Oh, I'll see you all.
Well, Eugene, what do you think of my father?
I hardly know him yet. He seems to be a very nice old gentleman.
And you'll go to the Freeman Founders to dine with him, won't you?
Yes, if it will please you.
Do you know, you are a very nice boy, Eugene, with all your strangeness. If you had laughed at my father, I shouldn't have minded. But I like you ever so much better for being nice to him.
Ought I to have laughed? I noticed that he said something funny, but I'm so ill at ease with strangers, I can never see a joke. I'm very sorry.
Oh, come, you great baby, you. You're worse than usual this morning. Why were you so melancholy as we came along in the cab?
Oh, there was nothing. I was wondering how much I ought to give the cabman. I know it's utterly silly, but you don't know how dreadful such things are to me. How I shrink from having to deal with strange people.
You do.
But it's all right. He beamed all over and touched his hat when Morel gave him 2 shillings. and I was on the point of offering him 10.
Oh, James, dear, he was going to give the cabman 10 shillings. 10 shillings for 3 minutes' drive. Oh, dear.
Never mind how much, Banks. The overpaying instinct is a generous one. Better than the underpaying instinct, and not so common.
No, cowardice, incompetence. Mrs. Morell's quite right.
Of course she is. And now I must leave you to James for the present. I suppose you're too much of a poet to know the state a woman finds her house in when she's been away for 3 weeks. Now give me my rug. Now, hang my cloak across my arm. Now my hat. Ah, now open the door for me. Thanks.
You'll stay to lunch, Marks. Thanks for the call.
I mustn't. I mean, I can't.
You mean you won't?
No, I should like to, indeed. Thank you very much, but
bosh. If you'd like to stay, stay. If you're shy, go and take a turn in the park and write poetry until 1:30, and then come in for a good feed.
Thank you. I should like that very much, but really I mustn't. The truth is, Mrs. Morell told me not to. She said she didn't think that you'd ask me to stay, but if you did, that you didn't really want me to. She said I'd understand, but I don't. Please don't tell her I told you.
Oh, is that all? Won't my suggestion that you should take a turn in the park meet the difficulty?
How?
Why, you duffer. No, I won't put it that way. My dear lad, in a happy marriage like ours, there's something very sacred in the return of the wife to her home. An old friend or a truly noble and sympathetic soul is not in the way on such occasions, but a chance visitor is. Candida thought I would rather not have you here, but she was wrong. I'm very fond of you, my boy, and I should like you to see for yourself what a happy thing it is to be married as I am.
Happy? Your marriage? You think that? You believe that?
I know it, my lad. La Rochefoucauld said that there are convenient marriages, but no delightful ones. You don't know the comfort of seeing through and through a thundering liar and rotten cynic like that fellow. Now, off with you to the park and write your poem. 1:30, sharp, mind. We never wait for anybody.
No, stop. You shan't. I'll force it into the light.
Eh?
I must speak to you. There is something that must be settled between us.
Now?
Now, before you leave this room.
I'm not going to leave it, my dear boy. I thought you were. Come, sit down quietly and tell me what it is. And remember, we are friends and need not fear that either of us will be anything but patient and kind to the other, whatever we may have to say.
Oh, I'm not forgetting myself. I'm only full of horror. You shall see whether this is a time for patience and kindness. Don't look at me in that self-complacent way. You think yourself stronger than I am, but I shall stagger you if you have a heart in your breast.
Stagger me, my boy. Out with it.
First, I love your wife.
Why, my dear child, of course you do. Everybody loves her. I can't help it. I like it. But, I say, Eugene, do you think yours is a case to be talked about? You're under 20. She's over 30. Doesn't it look rather too like a case of calf love?
You dare say that of her? You think that way of the love she inspires? It's an insult to her.
To her? Eugene, take care. I've been patient. I hope to remain patient, but there are some things I won't allow. Don't force me to show you the indulgence I shall show to a child. Be a man.
Oh, let us put aside all that cant. It horrifies me when I think of all the doses of it she's had to endure, and all the weary years during which you have selfishly and blindly sacrificed her to minister to your self-sufficiency. You, who have not one thought, one sense in common with her.
She seems to bear it pretty well. Eugene, my boy, you're making a fool of yourself. There's a piece of wholesome, plain speaking for you.
Oh, do you think I don't know all that? Do you think that the things people make fools of themselves about are any less real and true than the things they behave sensibly about? They are more true. They are the only things that are true. You're very calm and sensible and moderate with me, because you can see that I'm a fool about your wife. Oh, just as no doubt that old man who was here just now is very wise over your socialism, because he sees you're a fool about it. Does your complacent superiority to me prove that I am wrong?
Marchbanks, some devil is putting these words into your mouth. It is easy, terribly easy, to shake a man's faith in himself. To take advantage of that, to break a man's spirit, is devil's work. Take care of what you are doing. Take care.
I know. I'm doing it on purpose. I told you I should stagger you.
Eugene, listen to me. Someday, I hope and trust, you will be a happy man like me. You will be married, and you will be working with all your might and valor to make every spot on earth as happy as your own home. You will be one of the makers of the kingdom of heaven on earth. And, who knows, you may be a master builder, where I am only a humble journeyman. For don't think, my boy, that I cannot see in you, young as you are, promise of higher powers than I can ever pretend to. I well know that it's in the poet that the Holy Spirit of man, the God within him, is most godlike. It should make you tremble to think of that, to think that the heavy burden, the great gift of a poet, may be laid upon you.
It does not make me tremble. It's the want of it in others that makes me tremble.
Then help to kindle it in them, in me, not to extinguish it. In the future, when you're as happy as I am, I will be your true brother in the faith. I will help you to believe that God has given us a world that nothing but our own folly keeps from being a paradise. I will help you to believe that every stroke of work is sowing happiness for the great harvest that all, even the humblest, shall one day reap. And last, but trust me, not least, I will help you to believe that your wife loves you and is happy in her home. We need such help, Marchbanks. We need it greatly, and always. There are so many things to make us doubt, if once we let our understanding be troubled. Even at home we sit as if in camp, encompassed by a hostile army of doubts. Will you play the traitor and let them in on me?
Is it like this for her here always? A woman with a great soul, craving for reality, truth, freedom, and being fed on metaphors, sermons, stale perorations, mere rhetoric. Do you think a woman's soul can live on your talent for preaching?
Marchbanks, you make it hard for me to control myself. My talent is like yours, insofar as it has any real worth at all. It is a gift for finding words for divine truth.
It's a gift of the gab, nothing more and nothing less. What has your knack of fine talking to do with the truth, any more than playing the organ has? I've never been in your church, but I've been to your political meetings, and I've seen you do what's called rousing the meetings to enthusiasm. That is, you excited them until they behaved exactly as if they were drunk. And their wives looked on, and they saw what fools they were. Oh, it's an old story. You'll find it in the Bible. I imagine King David, in his fits of enthusiasm, was very like you. But his wife despised him in her heart.
Leave my house. Do you hear?
Let me alone. Don't touch me. Stop, Morel. If you strike me, I'll kill myself. I won't bear it. Let me go. Take your hand away.
You little sniveling, cowardly whelp. Go, before you frighten yourself into a fit.
I'm not afraid of you. It's you who are afraid of me.
It looks like it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You think because I shrink from being brutally handled, because I can do nothing but cry with rage when I am met with violence, because I can't fight for your wife as a drunken navvy would. All that makes you think I'm afraid of you. But you're wrong. If I haven't what you call British pluck, I haven't British cowardice either. I'm not afraid of a clergyman's ideas. I'll fight your ideas. I'll rescue her from slavery to them. I'll pit my own ideas against them. You're driving me out of this house because you daren't let her choose between your ideas and mine. You are afraid to let her see me again. Let me alone, I say. I'm going.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to touch you. Don't be afraid. When my wife comes back, she will want to know why you have gone. And when she finds that you are never going to cross our threshold again, she'll want to have that explained too. Now, I don't wish to distress her by telling her that you've behaved like a blackguard.
You shall. You must. If you give any explanation but the true one, you're a liar and a coward. Well, tell her what I said, and how you were strong and manly and shook me as a terrier shakes a rat, and how I shrank and was terrified, and how you called me a snivelling little whelp and put me out of the house.
If you don't tell her, I will. I'll write it to her.
Why do you want her to know this?
Because she will understand me and know that I understand her. If you keep back one word of it from her, if you're not ready to lay the truth at her feet, I am. Then you will know to the end of your days that she really belongs to me and not to you. Goodbye.
Stop. I will not tell her.
Either the truth or a lie. You must tell her if I go.
Marchbanks, it is sometimes justifiable to...
I know. To lie. It would be useless. Goodbye, Mr. Clergyman.
Oh, are you going, Eugene? Well, dear me, just look at you going out into the street in that state. You're a poet, certainly. Look at him, James. Look at his collar. Look at his tie. Look at his hair. One would think somebody had been throttling you. Here, stand still. There. Now you look so nice that I think you'd better stay to lunch after all, though I told you you mustn't. It'll be ready in half an hour.
I want to stay, of course. Unless the reverend gentleman, your husband, has anything to advance to the contrary.
Shall he stay, James? If he promises to be a good boy and helps me to lay the table.
Oh, yes, certainly. He had better.
Come and lay the table. I am the happiest of mortals.
So was I. And now I'll go.
The same day, later in the afternoon, Marchbanks, alone and idle, is trying to find out how the typewriter works. Hearing someone at the door, he steals guiltily to the window and pretends to be absorbed in the view. Miss Garnett, carrying the notebook in which she takes down Morell's shorthand from his dictation, sits down at the typewriter and sets to work transcribing them.
Oh, bother! You've been meddling with my typewriter, Mr. Marchbanks, and there's not the least use in your trying to look as if you hadn't.
I'm very sorry, Miss Garnett. I only tried to make it right, but it wouldn't.
Well, you've altered the spacing.
I assure you, I didn't. I didn't indeed. I only turned a little wheel. It gave a sort of click.
Oh, now I understand. I suppose you thought it was a sort of barrel organ. Nothing to do but turn the handle and it would write a beautiful love letter for you straight off, hmm?
I suppose a machine could be made to write love letters. They're all the same, aren't they?
Oh, how do I know? Why do you ask me?
I beg your pardon. I thought clever people, people who can do business and write letters and that sort of thing, always had to have love affairs to keep them from going mad.
Mr. Marchbanks!
I hope I haven't offended you. Perhaps I shouldn't have alluded to your love affairs.
I haven't any love affairs. How dare you say such a thing? The idea.
Really? Oh, then you're shy like me.
Certainly, I am not shy. What do you mean?
You must be. That's the reason there are so few love affairs in the world. We all go about longing for love. It's the first need of our natures and the first prayer of our hearts. But we dare not utter our longings. We're too shy. Oh, Miss Garnett, what would you not give to be without fear, without shame?
Well, upon my word.
Oh, don't say those stupid things to me. They don't deceive me. What use are they? Why are you afraid to be your real self with me? I'm just like you.
Like me? Pray, are you flattering me or flattering yourself? I don't feel quite sure which.
I go about in search of love, and I find it in unmeasured stores in the bosoms of others. But when I try to ask for it, this horrible shyness strangles me and I stand dumb, or worse than dumb, saying meaningless things, foolish lies. And I see the affection I am longing for given to dogs and cats and pet birds because they come and ask for it. It must be asked for. It's like a ghost. It cannot speak unless it is first spoken to. All the love in the world is longing to speak, only it dare not because it is shy. Shy! Shy! That is the world's tragedy.
Wicked people get over that shyness occasionally, don't they?
Wicked people means people who have no love. Therefore, they have no shame. They have the power to ask love because they don't need it, and they have the power to offer it because they've none to give. But we, who have loved and long to mingle it with the love of others, we cannot utter a word. You find that, don't you?
Look here, if you don't stop talking like this, I'll leave the room, Mr. Marchbanks. I really will. It's not proper.
Nothing that's worth saying is proper. I can't understand you, Miss Garnett. What am I to talk about?
Talk about indifferent things. And talk about the weather.
Would you talk about indifferent things if a child were by, crying bitterly with hunger?
I suppose not.
Well, I can't talk about indifferent things with my heart crying out bitterly in its hunger.
Then hold your tongue.
Yes. That's what it always comes to. We hold our tongues. But does that stop the cry of your heart? For it does cry, doesn't it? It must if you have a heart.
Oh, it's no business of yours whether my heart cries or not. But I've a mind to tell you for all that.
You needn't. I know already that it must.
But mind, if you ever say I said so, I'll deny it.
Yes, I know. And so you haven't the courage to tell him.
Him? Who?
Whoever he is, the man you love. Might be anybody. The curate, Mr. Mill, perhaps.
Mr. Mill? A fine man to break my heart about, indeed. I'd rather of you than Mr. Mill.
Oh, really, I'm very sorry, but you mustn't think...
Oh, don't be frightened. It's not you. It's not any one particular person.
I know. You feel that you could love anybody that offered.
Anybody that offered? No, I do not. What do you take me for?
It's no use. You won't make me real answers. Only those things that everybody says.
Oh, well, if you want original conversation, you'd better go and talk to yourself.
That's what all poets do. They talk to themselves out loud and the world overhears them. Oh, but it's horribly lonely not to hear someone else talk sometimes.
Ah, wait until Mr. Morell comes. He'll talk to you. Oh, you needn't make wry faces over him. He can talk better than you. He'd talk your little head off.
Ah, I understand now.
What do you understand?
Your secret. Tell me, is it really and truly possible for a woman to love him?
Well!
No, answer me. I want to know. I must. I can't understand it. I can see nothing in him but words, pious resolutions, what people call goodness. You can't love that.
I simply don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand you.
You do. You lie.
Oh!
You do understand and you know. Is it possible for a woman to love him?
Yes!
Oh! Oh, no.
Whatever is the matter with you? Oh, praise heaven, here's somebody.
Well, so this is the way to leave you to yourself, Mr. Marchbanks. I've come to keep you company. James is receiving a deputation in the dining room. Candy's upstairs educating a young stitcher girl she's interested in. Oh, you must find it lonesome here with no one but the typist to talk to.
Oh, he'll be all right now that he has the advantage of your polished conversation. That's one comfort, anyhow.
I was not addressing myself to you, young woman, that I'm aware of.
Did you ever see worse manners, Mr. Marchbanks?
Mr. Marchbanks is a gentleman and knows his place, which is more than some people do.
It's well you and I are not ladies and gentlemen. I talked to you pretty straight if Mr. Marchbanks weren't here. Oh, there. I spoiled this letter. Have to be done all over again. Oh, I can't contain myself. Silly old fathead.
Oh, I'm a silly old fathead, am I? Oh, indeed. All right, my girl, all right. You just wait till I tell your employer. You'll see. I'll teach you. See if I don't. No, no, you've done it now. No use of talking to me. I'll let you know who I am. Don't you take no notice of her, Mr. Marchbanks. She's beneath it.
And we'd better change the subject. I don't think Miss Garnett meant anything.
Oh, didn't I, though?
Yes. Oh, I wouldn't demean myself to take notice of her.
Oh, that's for me.
No, we can spare you. Now we're alone, Mr. Marchbanks. Now, let me give you a friendly hint that I wouldn't give to everybody. Now, how long have you known my son-in-law James here?
I don't know. I can never remember dates. A few months, perhaps.
There, will ever notice anything strange about him?
I don't think so.
Oh, no more you wouldn't. That's the danger on it. Well, he's mad.
Mad?
Mad as a march hare. Now, you take notice on him and you'll see.
But surely that's only because his opinions...
That's the same what I used to think, Mr. Marchbanks. I thought long enough that it was only his opinions. Although, mind you... Opinions becomes very serious things when people takes to acting on them, as he does. But that's not what I'm going on. What do you think he says to me this morning in this very room?
What?
What he says to me, Now, this is as we're sitting here now. He says, I'm a fool, he says, and you're a scoundrel. Me, a scoundrel, mind you. And then shook hands with me on it, as if it was to my credit. Now, do you mean to tell me that that man is sane?
Yes, Mr.
Morell. Yeah, here he is now. Just you keep your eye on him and see. I'm sorry, James, to have to make a complaint to you. I don't want to do it, but I feel I ought to. As a matter of right and duty.
What's the matter?
Now, Mr. Marchbanks will bear me out. He was a witness. Your young woman so far forgot herself as to call me a silly old fathead.
Oh, now, isn't that exactly like Prossy? She's so frank she can't contain herself. Poor Prossy.
Here, you expect me to put up with it from the like of her?
Oh, nonsense. You can't take any notice of it. Never mind.
Oh, I don't mind her. I'm above it. But is it right? That's what I want to know.
That's the question for the church, not for the laity. Has it done you any harm? That's the question for you, eh? Of course it hasn't. Think no more of it.
Yeah, what did I tell you? Mad as a hatter. Well, when is dinner, James?
Not for a couple of hours, yeah.
Oh, give me a nice book to read over the fire, will you, James? There's a good chap.
What sort of book? A good one, Burgess?
Nah, somewhat pleasant, just to pass the time. Thank you, James.
Oh, much thanks. Candida will come to entertain you presently. She's got rid of her pupil. She's filling the lamps.
Oh, but that will soil her hands. I can't bear that. It's a shame. I'll go and fill them.
You better not. She'd set you to clean my boots to save me the trouble of doing it myself in the morning.
Don't you keep a servant now, James?
Yes, but she isn't a slave. And the house looks as if I kept three. That means that everyone has to lend a hand. It's not a bad idea. Posse and I can talk business after breakfast while we're washing up. Washing up's no trouble when there are two people to do it.
Do you think that every woman is as coarse-grained as Miss Garnet?
That's quite right, Mr. Marchbanks. That's quite right. Now, she is coarse-grained.
Marchbanks?
Yes?
How many servants does your father keep?
I don't know.
So many that you don't know. When there's anything coarse-grained to be done, you just ring the bell and throw it on somebody else, eh?
Oh, don't torture me. You don't even ring the bell. But your wife's beautiful fingers are dabbling in powerful oil while you sit here comfortably preaching about it. Everlasting preaching, preaching, preaching. Word, word,
oh,
word.
Here. Devil a better. Had you there, James, straight.
If you stay with us, Eugene, I think I will hand over the lamps to you. They smell so.
I will stay on condition that you hand over all the rough work to me.
Oh, that's very gallant. But I think I should like to see how you do it first. James, you've not been looking after the house properly.
What have I done? Or not done, Mother?
My own particular pet scrubbing brush has been used for blackleading.
Oh!
What's the matter? Are you ill, Eugene?
No, not ill. Only horror.
What? You got the horrors, Mr. Marchbanks? Oh, that's bad at your age. You must leave it off gradually.
Nonsense, Papa. It's only poetic horror, isn't it, Eugene?
A poetic horror, is it? I beg your pardon, I'm sure.
What is it, Eugene? A scrubbing brush? Oh, well, there, never mind. Wouldn't you like to present me with a nice new one, with an ivory back inlaid with mother of pearl?
No. Not a scrubbing brush. But a boat. A tiny shallop to sail away in, far from the world, where the marble floors are washed by the rain and dried by the sun, where the south wind dusts the beautiful green and purple carpets. Or a chariot to carry us up into the sky, where the lamps are stars and do not need to be filled with paraffin oil every day.
And there's nothing to do but to be idle, selfish, and useless.
Oh, James, how could you spoil it all?
Yes, to be idle, selfish, and useless, that's to be beautiful and free and happy. Hasn't every man desired that with all his soul for the woman he loves? That's my ideal. What's yours? And that of all the dreadful people who live in these hideous rows of houses. Sermons and scrubbing brushes. With you to preach the sermon and your wife to scrub.
He cleans the boots, Eugene. You will have to clean them tomorrow for saying that about him.
Oh, don't talk about boots. Your feet should be beautiful on the mountains.
Oh, my feet would not be beautiful on the Hackney Road without boots. Oh,
come, Candy, now, don't be vulgar. Mr. Marchbanks, you're accustomed to it. You're giving them the horrors again. I mean the poetic ones.
Did telegram. Reply paid. The boy's waiting. Oh, Maria's ready for you now in the kitchen, Mrs. Morell. The onions have come.
Onions?
Yes, onions. Not even Spanish ones. Nasty little red onions. You shall help me to slice them. Come along.
Candy didn't know to handle an old nevier like that. That's going too far with it. Look here, James. Does he often get taken strange like that?
I don't know.
Oh, he talks very pretty. I always had a turn for a bit of poetry. Candy takes art of me that way. Used to make me tell her fairy stories when she was only a little kiddie. Not that high.
Oh, indeed. Excuse me, I shan't be long.
Used you to make the fairy stories up out of your own head? I should never have supposed you had it in you. By the way, I'd better warn you, since you've taken such a fancy to Mr. Marchbanks, he's mad.
Mad? What? Him too?
Mad as a march hare. He did frighten me, I can tell you, just before you came in that time. Haven't you noticed the strange things he says?
So that's what the poetic horror means. Oh, blame me if it didn't come into my head once or twice that he was a bit off his chump. Well, this is a pretty sort of asylum for a man to be in with no one but you to take care of him.
Oh, yes. What a dreadful thing it would be if anything happened to you.
Now, don't you address your remarks to me. You tell your employer that I've gone into the garden for a smoke.
Oh.
Leaving, perhaps?
Going. For a turn in the garden to smoke, James.
Oh, all right, all right. Well, Miss Posse, why have you been calling my father-in-law names?
Oh, come,
never mind, Pross. He is a silly old fathead, isn't he? Well, where's Eugene?
Washing his hands in the scullery under the tap. He will make an excellent cook if he can only get over his dread of Maria.
Oh, no doubt.
Come here, dear, and let me look at you. Turn your face to the light. Oh, my boy is not looking well. Has he been overworking?
Nothing more than usual.
He looks very pale and grey and old. Here, you've done enough writing for today. Leave Prossy to finish it. Come and talk to me.
But I have to...
No, I must be talked to. Now you're beginning to look better already. But must you go out every night lecturing and talking? I hardly have one evening a week with you. Of course, what you say is all very true, but it does no good. They don't mind what you say to them one little bit. They think they agree with you, but what's the use of their agreeing with you if they go and do just the opposite of what you tell them the moment your back's turned? Look at our congregation at St. Dominic's. Why do they come to hear you talking about Christianity every Sunday? Why? Just because they've been so full of business and money-making for 6 days that they want to forget all about it and have a rest on the seventh so that they can go back fresh and make money harder than ever. Why, you positively help them at it instead of hindering them.
You know very well, Candida, that I often blow them up soundly for that. And if there's nothing in their church going but rest and diversion, why don't they try something more amusing, more self-indulgent? There must be some good in the fact that they prefer St. Dominic's to worse places on Sundays.
The worst places aren't open. And even if they were, they daren't be seen going to them. Besides, James, dear, you preach so splendidly that it's as good as a play for them. Why do you think the women are so enthusiastic?
Canada.
Oh, I know, you silly boy. You think it's your socialism and your religion. But if it were that, they'd do what you tell them instead of only coming to look at you. They all have Prossy's complaint.
Prossy's complaint? What do you mean?
Yes, Prossy, and all the other secretaries you ever had. Why does Prossy condescend to wash up the things and to peel potatoes and abase herself in all manner of ways for 6 shillings a week less than she used to get in a city office? She's in love with you, James. That's the reason. They're all in love with you. And you are so in love with preaching because you do it so beautifully. You think it's all enthusiasm for the kingdom of heaven on earth, and so do they. You dear silly.
Candida, what dreadful, soul-destroying cynicism. Are you jesting? Or can it be, are you jealous?
Yes. I feel a little jealous sometimes.
Of Prossy?
Oh, no. Not jealous of anybody, but jealous for somebody else who is not as loved as he ought to be.
Me?
You! You're spoiled with love and worship. You get far more than is good for you. No, I mean Eugene.
Eugene?
It seems unfair that all the love should go to you and none to him, although he needs it much more than you do. What's the matter? Am I worrying you?
No, not at all. You know that I have perfect confidence in you, Candida.
You vain thing! Are you so sure of your irresistible attractions?
Candida, you're shocking me. I never thought of my attractions. I thought of your goodness, of your purity. That's what I confide in.
What a nasty, uncomfortable thing to say to me. Oh, you are a clergyman, a thorough clergyman.
So Eugene says.
Eugene's always right. Oh, he's a wonderful boy. I've grown fonder and fonder of him all the time I was away. Do you know, James, that though he has not the least suspicion of it himself, he's ready to fall madly in love with me.
Oh, he has no suspicion of it himself, hasn't he?
Not a bit. Oh, someday he'll know when he's grown up and experienced like you. And he'll know that I must have known. I wonder what he'll think of me then.
No evil, Candida, I hope and trust. No evil.
That will depend.
Depend?
It will depend on what happens to him. Don't you see? It will depend on how he comes to learn what love really is. I mean, on the sort of woman who will teach it to him.
Yes. No. I don't know what you mean.
No, if he learns it from a good woman, then it will be all right and he will forgive me.
Forgive?
Suppose he learns it from a bad woman, as so many men do. Especially poetic men who imagine all women are angels. Suppose he discovers the value of love when he has thrown it away and degraded himself in his ignorance. Will he forgive me then, do you think?
Forgive you for what?
Oh, don't you understand? I mean, will he forgive me for not teaching him myself? For abandoning him to the bad women for the sake of my goodness, of my purity, as you call it? Oh, James, how little you understand me to talk of your confidence in my goodness and purity. I would give them both to poor Eugene as willingly as I would give my shawl to a beggar dying of cold, if there were nothing else to restrain me. Put your trust in my love for you, James. Well, if that went, I should care very little for your sermons, mere phrases that you cheat yourself and others with every day.
His words.
Whose words?
Eugene's.
He is always right. He understands you, he understands me, he understands Prossy, and you, darling, you understand nothing.
How can you bear to do that when... Oh, Candida, I'd rather you had plunged a grappling iron into my heart. And given me that kiss.
Dear, what's the matter?
Don't touch me.
James, what are you...
Is anything the matter?
Nothing but this. Either you were right this morning, or Candida is mad.
Walt, can be mad too. Oh, come now.
Oh, you're only shocked, is that all? How conventional all you unconventional people are.
Oh, come, behave yourself, Candy. What does Mr. Marsbanks think?
This comes of James teaching me to think for myself and never to hold back out of fear of what other people may think of me. Oh, it works beautifully as long as I think the same things as he does. But now, because I've just thought of something different, look at him. Just look.
Oh, well, James, you certainly aren't as impressive looking as usual.
I suppose not. I beg all your pardons. I was not conscious of making a fuss. Well.
Well, Eugene, why are you so sad? Did the onions make you cry?
It is your cruelty. I hate cruelty. It's a horrible thing to see one person make another suffer.
Oh, poor boy, have I been cruel? Did I make it slice nasty little onions?
Oh, stop. I don't mean myself. You've made him suffer frightfully. I feel his pain in my own heart. I know that it's not your fault, that it's something that must happen, but don't make light of it. I shudder when you tortured him aloud.
I tortured James? Nonsense, Eugene, how you exaggerate. Silly. Don't work any more, James, dear. Come and talk to us.
Well, no, I can't talk. I can only preach.
Well, come and preach.
Oh, no, Candy, I'll hang it all. How do you do, Mrs. Morell? So glad to see you back again.
Thank you, Lexi. You know Eugene, don't you?
Oh, yes. How do you do, Marchbanks?
Quite well, thanks.
I've just come from the Guild of St. Matthew, Morell. They're in the greatest consternation about your telegram.
What did you telegraph about, James?
He was to have spoken to them tonight. They've taken the large hall in Mare Street and spent a lot of money on posters. Morell's telegram was to say he couldn't come. It came to them like a thunderbolt.
Given up an engagement to speak.
First time in his life, I'll bet. Ain't it, Candy?
They decided to send an urgent telegram to you asking you whether you could not change your mind. Have you received it?
Yes, I got it.
It was reply paid.
Yes, I know, I answered it. I can't go.
But why, James?
Because I don't choose. These people forget that I'm a man. They think I'm a talking machine to be turned on for their pleasure every evening of my life. May I not have one night at home with my wife and my friends?
Oh, James.
Oh, now.
James, you mustn't mind what I said about that. And if you don't go, you'll have an attack of bad conscience tomorrow.
I know, of course, that they make the most unreasonable demands on you. But they have been telegraphing all over the place for another speaker. And they can get nobody but the president of the Agnostic League.
Well, an excellent man. What better do they want?
Oh, but he always insists on the divorce of socialism from Christianity. He will undo all the good we've been doing. Of course, you know best.
Oh, do go, James. We'll all go.
Ah, look here, Candy. Look, I say, let's stay at our mother's fire. Comfortable. He won't need to be more than a couple of hours away.
You'll be just as comfortable at the meeting. We'll all sit on the platform and be great people.
Oh, please, don't let us go on the platform. No, everyone will stare at us. I couldn't. I'll sit at the back of the room.
Don't be afraid. They'll be all too busy looking at James to notice you.
Prossy's complaint, Canada, eh?
Yes, Prossy's complaint.
Prossy's complaint? What are you talking about, James?
Miss Garlett?
Yes, Mr. Morell, coming.
Listen here, Mr. Mill. What's Prossy's complaint? What's wrong with her?
Well, I don't exactly know. But she spoke very strangely to me this morning. I'm afraid she's a little out of her mind sometimes.
Oh, why, it must be catching. Four in the same house.
What is it, Mr. Morell?
Telegraph to the Guild of St. Matthew that I am coming.
Oh, but don't they expect
you? Do as I tell you. Badgers, sir. You don't want to come?
Oh, don't put it like that, James. Well, it's only that it ain't Sunday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you might like to be introduced to the chairman.
Oh.
He's on the works committee of the county council and has some influence in the matter of contracts.
Oh, well.
You'll come?
Of course I'll come, James. Ain't it always a pleasure to hear you?
I shall want you to take some notes of the meeting, Miss Garnet, if you have no other engagement. You're coming, Lexi, I suppose.
Certainly.
We're all coming, James.
No, you are not coming. And Eugene is not coming. You'll stay here and entertain him to celebrate your return home.
But, James...
I insist. You do not want to come, and he does not want to come.
But I do...
Oh, don't concern yourselves. I shall have plenty of people without you. Your chairs will be wanted by unconverted people who have never heard me before.
Eugene, wouldn't you like to come?
I should be afraid to let myself go before Eugene. He's so critical of sermons. He knows I'm afraid of him. He told me as much this morning. Well, I shall show him how much afraid I am. By leaving him here in your custody, Candida.
That's brave. That's beautiful.
But... Is anything the matter, James? I can't understand.
I thought it was I who couldn't understand, dear.
It is now past 10 in the evening. The curtains are drawn and the lamps lighted. The typewriter is in its case. The large table has been cleared and tidied. Everything indicates that the day's work is over. Candida and Marchbanks are sitting by the fire. The reading lamp is on the mantelshelf above Marchbanks, who is reading aloud. A little pile of manuscripts and a couple of volumes of poetry are on the carpet beside him. Candida is in an easy chair, the poker upright in her hand. Leaning back and looking intently at the point of it, with her feet stretched towards the blaze, she is in a waking dream, miles away from her surroundings, and completely oblivious of Eugene.
For thy sweet love remembered such wealth brings, but then I scorned to change my state with kings. Every poet that ever lived has had to put that thought into a sonnet. He must. He can't help it. Haven't you been listening? Mrs. Morell. Haven't you been listening?
Oh, yes, it was very nice. Go on, Eugene. I'm longing to hear what happens to the angel.
Oh! I beg your pardon for boring you.
But you're not boring me, I assure you. Please go on. Do, Eugene.
I finished the poem about the angel a quarter of an hour ago. I've read you several things since.
I'm so sorry, Eugene. I think the poker must have hypnotized me.
It made me horribly uneasy.
Why didn't you tell me? I'd have put it down at once.
I was afraid of making you uneasy, too. It looked as if it were a weapon. If I were a hero of old, I should have laid my drawn sword between us. If Morell had come in, he would have thought you'd taken up the poker because there was no sword between us.
What? I can't quite follow that. Those sonnets have addled me. Why should there be a sword between us?
Oh, never mind.
No, don't start reading again, Eugene. There are limits to my appetite for poetry, even your poetry. You've been reading to me for more than 2 hours, ever since James went out. I want to talk.
No, I mustn't talk. I think I'll go out and take a walk in the park.
Nonsense, it's closed long ago. Come and sit down on the hearthrug and talk moonshine as you usually do. I want to be amused. Don't you want to?
Yes.
Then come along. Sit here, at my feet.
I've been so miserable all the evening because I've been doing right. Now I'm doing wrong and I'm happy.
Yes, I'm sure you feel a great grown-up deceiver. Quite proud of yourself, aren't you?
Take care. I'm ever so much older than you, if you only knew. May I say some wicked things to you?
No. But you may say anything you really and truly feel. Anything at all, no matter what it is. I'm not afraid as long as it's your real self that speaks and not a mere attitude, a gallant attitude or a wicked attitude, or even a poetic attitude. I put you on your honour and truth. Now say whatever you want to.
Now I can't say anything. All the words I know belong to some attitude or other. All except one.
Which one is that?
Candida. 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 I must say that now because you've put me on my honour and truth and I never think or feel Mrs. Morell. It's always Candida.
Of course. And what have you to say to Candida?
Nothing but to repeat your name 1,000 times. Don't you feel that every time is a prayer to you?
Doesn't it make you happy to pray?
Yes. Very happy.
Well, that happiness is an answer to your prayer. Do you want anything more?
No. I have come into heaven where want is unknown.
I hope I don't disturb you.
Oh, James, how you startled me. I was so taken up with Eugene, I didn't hear the latch key. How did the meeting go off? Did you speak well?
I've never spoken better in my
life. Oh, that was first rate. How much was the collection?
I forgot to ask.
Oh, he must have spoken splendidly, or he'd never have forgotten that. Oh, where are all the others?
They left long before I could get away. I thought I should never escape. I believe they're having supper somewhere.
Oh, well, in that case, Maria may go to bed. I'll tell her.
Well?
Well?
Have you anything to tell me?
Only I've been making a fool of myself here in private, whilst you've been making a fool of yourself in public.
Hardly in the same way, I think.
The very, very, very same way. I've been playing the good man, just like you. When you began your heroics about leaving me here with Candida...
Candida?
Oh, yes, I've got that far. But don't be afraid. Heroics are infectious. I caught the disease from you. I swore not to say a word in your absence that I would not have said a month ago in your presence.
Did you keep your oath?
I kept it somehow until about 10 minutes ago. Up to that moment, I went on desperately reading to her, reading my own poems, anybody's poems, to stave off a conversation. I was standing outside the gate of heaven and refusing to go in. You can't think how heroic it was, and how uncomfortable. Then she couldn't bear being read to any longer.
And you approached the gate of heaven at last?
Yes.
Well? Speak, man. Have you no feeling for me?
Then she became an angel. And there was a flaming sword that turned every way so that I couldn't go in. For I saw that the gate was really the gate of hell.
She repulsed you.
No, you fool. Oh, if she had done that, I should never have seen that I was in heaven already. Repulsed me? You think that would have saved us? Virtuous indignation? You're not fit to live in the same world with her.
Do you think you make yourself more worthy by reviling me, Eugene?
Here endeth the 1001st lesson, Morel. I don't think much of your preaching after all. I believe I could do it better myself. The man I want to meet is the man that Candida married.
The man that... Do you mean me?
I don't mean the Reverend James Marvel Morel, moralist and windbag. I mean the real man that the Reverend James must have hidden somewhere inside his black coat. The man that Candida loved. You can't make a woman like Candida love you merely by buttoning your collar at the back instead of the front.
When Candida promised to marry me, I was the same moralist and windbag you now see. I wore my black coat and my collar buttoned behind instead of in front. Do you think she would have loved me any the better for being insincere in my profession?
Oh, she forgave you. Just as she forgives me for being a coward and a weakling and what you call a snivelling little whelp and all the rest of it. A woman like that has divine insight. She loves our souls, and not our follies and vanities, nor our collars and coats, nor any of the other rags and tatters we're rolled up in. What I want to know is how you got past the flaming sword that stopped me.
Perhaps because I was not interrupted at the end of 10 minutes.
What?
Man can climb to the highest summits, but he cannot dwell there long.
It's false. There he can dwell forever, and there only. It's in the other moments that he can find no rest, no sense of the silent glory of life. Where would you have me spend my moments if not on the summits?
In the scullery, slicing onions and filling lamps.
Or in the pulpit, scrubbing cheap earthenware stoves.
Yes, that too. It was there that I earned my golden moment, and the right, in that moment, to ask her to love me. I did not take the moment on credit, nor did I use it to steal another man's happiness.
Oh, I have no doubt you conducted the transaction as honestly as if you were buying a pound of cheese. I could only go to her as a beggar.
A beggar? Dying of cold. Asking for her shawl.
Thank you for touching up my poetry. Yes, if you like, a beggar dying of cold, asking for her shawl.
And she refused? Shall I tell you why she refused? I can tell you on her own authority. It was because
of... She didn't refuse.
No?
She offered me all I chose to ask for. A shawl, her wings, the wreath of stars on her head, the lilies in her hand, the crescent moon beneath her feet.
Out with the truth, man! My wife is my wife. I want no more of your poetic fripperies. I know well that if I have lost her love and you have gained it, no law will bind her.
Catch me by the shirt collar, Morel. She'll arrange it for me afterwards as she did this morning. I shall feel her hand. Touch me.
You young imp, do you know how dangerous it is to say that to me? Or has something made you brave?
I'm not afraid now. I disliked you before. That was why I shrank from your touch. But I saw today, when she tortured you, that you love her. Since then, I've been your friend. You may strangle me if you like.
Eugene... If that is not a heartless lie, if you have a spark of human feeling left in you, will you tell me what happened in my absence?
What happened? Why, the flaming sword. Well, in plain prose, I love her so exquisitely that I want nothing more than the happiness of being in such love. And before I had time to come down from the highest summits, you came in.
So, it is still unsettled. Still the misery of doubt.
Misery? I am the happiest of men. I desire nothing now but her happiness. Oh, Morel, let us both give her up. Why should she have to choose between a wretched little nervous disease like me and a pig-headed parson like you? Let us go on a pilgrimage. You to the east and I to the west in search of a worthy lover for her. Some beautiful archangel with purple wings.
Some fiddlesticks. Oh, if she's mad enough to leave me for you, who will protect her? Who will help her? Who will work for her? Who will be a father to her children?
She does not ask those silly questions. It's she who wants somebody to protect, to help, to work for. Somebody to give her children to protect, to help and to work for. Some grown-up man who has become as a little child again. Oh, you fool. You fool, you triple fool. I am the man, Morel. I am the man. You don't understand what a woman is. Send for her, Morel. Send for her and let her choose between...
What on earth are you at, Eugene?
James and I are having a preaching match. And he is getting the worst of it.
You have been annoying him. Now, I won't have it, Eugene, do you hear? My boy shall not be worried. I will protect him.
Protect?
What have you been saying, Eugene?
Nothing.
Eugene, nothing?
I mean... I'm very sorry. I won't do it again. Indeed, I won't. I let him alone.
Let me alone? You young...
No. Let me deal with him, James.
Oh, you're not angry with me, are you?
Yes, I am very angry. I have a good mind to pack you out of the house.
Gently, Canada, gently. I'm able to take care of myself.
Yes, dear, of course you are, but you mustn't be annoyed and made miserable.
Oh, I'll go.
No, you needn't go. I can't turn you out of the house at this time of night. Oh, shame on you, for shame.
But what have I done?
I know what you have done as well as if I had been here all the time. Oh, it was unworthy. You are like a child. You cannot hold your tongue.
I would die 10 times over sooner than give you a moment's pain.
Much good your dying would do me.
Canada, my dear, this altercation is hardly seemly. It's a matter between two men, and I am the right person to settle it.
Two men? Do you call that a man? You bad boy, Eugene.
If I'm to be scolded like a boy, I must make a boy's excuse. He began it, and he's bigger than I am.
That can't be true. You didn't begin it, James, did you?
No.
Oh!
You began it this morning. But your other point is true. I am certainly the bigger of the two, and I hope the stronger, Canada. So you'd better leave the matter in my hands.
Yes, dear, but I don't understand about this morning.
You need not understand, my dear.
But, James, bother, here they come. I must let them in.
Oh, Morel, isn't it dreadful? She's angry with us. She hates me. What shall I do?
Eugene, my head is spinning round. She'll begin to laugh presently.
Oh, no, no, no. She'll think I've thrown you into hysterics. Oh, don't laugh.
Morel, I must congratulate you. What a noble, inspired address you gave us. You surpassed yourself.
So you did, James. It kept me fair awake to the last word. Now, didn't it, Miss Garnett?
Oh, I wasn't minding you. I was trying to make notes.
Did I go too fast, Pross?
Much too fast. You know I can't do more than 90 words a minute.
Oh, well, never mind. Never mind. Never mind. Have you all had supper?
Mr. Burgess has been kind enough to give us a really splendid supper at the Belgrave.
Oh, don't mention it, Mr. Mill. You're hearty welcome to my little treat.
We had champagne. I never tasted it before. I feel quite giddy.
A champagne supper? That was very handsome. Was it my eloquence that produced all this extravagance?
Your eloquence and Mr. Burgess's goodness of heart. Ah. What a very fine fellow that chairman is, Morel. He came to supper with us.
Oh, the chairman. Now I understand.
We'll have some lemonade. You know our rules, total abstinence.
No use, dear. They've all had champagne. Pross has broken her pledge.
You don't mean to say you've been drinking champagne.
Yes, I do. I'm only a beer teetotaler, not a champagne teetotaler. I don't like beer. Are there any letters for me to answer, Mr. Morel?
No more tonight.
Very well. Good night, everybody.
Had I not better see you home, Miss Garnett?
No, thank you. I shan't trust myself with anybody tonight. Oh, I wish I hadn't taken any of that stuff.
Stuff indeed. That girl don't know what champagne is. Pomery and Greenough at 12 and 6 a bottle. She took 2 glasses almost straight off.
Go and look after her, Lexi.
But if she should really be Suppose she began to sing in the street or anything of that sort.
Just so she may. That's why you'd better see her safely home.
Do, Lexi. There's a good fellow.
It's evidently my duty to go. I hope it may not be necessary. Good night, Mrs. Morell.
Good night.
Good night.
He was gushing with extra piety himself after two sips. Our people can't drink like they used to. Well, James, it's time to look up. Oh, Mr. Marchbanks, shall I have the pleasure of your company for a bit of the way home?
Yes, I'd better go.
You sit down. You're not going yet.
No, I didn't mean to.
Mr. Marchbanks will stay the night with us, Papa.
Well, I'll say good night. So long, James. Make him give you a nightlight by your bed, Mr. Marchbanks. It'll comfort you if you wake up in the night with a touch of that complaint of yours. Good night.
Thank you, I will. Good night, Mr. Burgess.
Oh, I'll see you.
Stay here, dear. I'll put on Papa's coat for him.
Oh, Morell, there's going to be a terrible scene. Aren't you afraid?
Not in the least.
I've never envied you for your courage before. Stand by me, won't you?
Each for himself, Eugene. She must choose between us now.
Are you sorry, Eugene?
Yes, heartbroken.
Well, then you're forgiven. Now, off to bed like a good little boy. I want to talk to James about you.
Oh, I can't do that, Morell. I must be here. I'll not go away. Tell her.
Tell me what?
I have nothing to tell her. Except that she is my greatest treasure on earth. If she is really mine.
I'm sure Eugene can say no less, if that is all.
Morell, she's laughing at us.
There's nothing to laugh at. Are you laughing at us, Candida?
Eugene is very quick-witted, James. I hope I am going to laugh, but I am not sure that I am not going to be very angry.
Stop, Morell. Don't let us say anything.
I hope you don't mean that as a threat, Candida.
Take care, James. Eugene, I asked you to go. Are you going?
He shall not go. I wish him to remain.
I'll go. I'll do whatever you want.
Stop. Didn't you hear James say he wished you to stay? James is master here. Don't you know that?
By what right is he master?
Tell him, James.
My dear, I don't know of any right that makes me master. I assert no such right.
You don't know. Oh, James, James. I wonder, do you understand, Eugene? No, you're too young. Well, I give you leave to stay and learn. Now, James, what's the matter? Come, tell me.
Don't.
Come, out with it.
I meant to prepare your mind carefully, Candida, so as to prevent misunderstanding.
Yes, dear, I'm sure you did. But never mind, I shan't misunderstand.
Well,
Well?
Eugene declares that you are in love with him.
No, 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 never. I did not, Mrs. Morell, it's not true. I said I loved you. I said I understood you and that he couldn't. And it was not after what passed there before the fire that I spoke. It was not, on my word. It was this morning.
This morning?
Yes. That was what was the matter with my collar.
Your collar? Oh, James, did you...
You know, Canada, that I have a temper to struggle with. And he said that you despised me in your heart.
Did you say that, Eugene?
No.
Then James has just told me a falsehood. Is that what you mean?
No, no. It was David's wife, and it wasn't at home. It was when she saw him dancing before all the people.
Dancing before all the people, Candida, and thinking he was moving their hearts by his mission, when they were only suffering from Prossy's complaint.
Well...
Don't try to look indignant, Candida.
Try!
Eugene was right. As you told me a few hours after, he is always right. He said nothing that you did not say far better yourself. He is the poet who sees everything. And I am the poor person who understands nothing.
Do you mind what is said by a foolish boy just because I said something like it in jest?
The foolish boy can speak with the inspiration of a child and the cunning of a serpent. He has claimed that you belong to him and not to me. And, rightly or wrongly, I have some fear that it may be true. I will not go about tortured with doubts and suspicions. I will not live with you and keep a secret from you. I will not suffer the intolerable degradation of jealousy. We have agreed, he and I, that you shall choose between us now. I await your decision.
Oh. I am to choose, am I? I suppose it is quite settled that I must belong to one or the other.
Quite. You must choose, definitely.
Morel, you don't understand. She means she belongs to herself.
I mean that and a good deal more, Master Eugene, as you will both find out presently. And pray, my lords and masters, what have you to offer for my choice? I am up for auction, it seems. What do you bid, James?
I can't speak.
Ah, dearest.
Stop! It's not fair. You must ensure that you suffer, Morel. I am on the rack, too, and I'm not crying.
Yes, you're right. It's not for pity that I'm bidding.
I beg your pardon, James. I did not mean to touch you. Well, I'm waiting to hear your bid.
I have nothing to offer you but my strength for your defense, my honesty for your surety, my ability and industry for your livelihood, and my authority and position for your dignity. That is all it becomes a man to offer to a woman.
And you, Eugene, what have you to offer?
My weakness, my desolation, my heart's need.
That's a good bid, Eugene. Now I know how to make my choice.
Candid
coward!
I give myself to the weaker of the two.
I accept your sentence, Candid.
Do you understand, Eugene?
Oh, I feel I'm lost. He cannot bear the burden.
You mean me, Candida?
Let us sit down and talk comfortably over it like three friends. Sit down, dear. You remember what you told me about yourself, Eugene. How nobody has cared for you since your old nurse died. How those clever, fashionable sisters and successful brothers of yours were your mother's and father's pets. How miserable you were at Eton. How your father is trying to starve you into returning to Oxford. How you had to live without comfort or welcome or refuge, always lonely and nearly always disliked and misunderstood, poor boy.
I had my books. I had nature. And at last I met you.
Never mind that, just at present. Now, I want you to look at this other boy. My boy. Spoiled from his cradle. We go once a fortnight to see his parents. You should come with us, Eugene, to see the pictures of the hero of that house. James as a baby. The most wonderful of all babies. James holding his first school prize. One at the ripe age of 8. James as captain of his 11. James in his first frock coat. James under all sorts of glorious circumstances. You know how strong he is. Well, I hope he didn't hurt you. How clever he is. How happy. Ask James's mother and his three sisters what it cost to save James the trouble of doing anything but be strong and clever and happy. Ask me what it costs to be James's mother and three sisters and wife and mother to his children all in one. Ask Brossy and Maria how troublesome the house is, even when we have no visitors to help us slice the onions. Ask the tradesmen who want to worry James and spoil his sermons who it is that puts them off. When there is money to give, he gives it. And when there is money to refuse, I refuse it. I build a castle of comfort and indulgence and love for him and stand sentinel to keep the little vulgar cares out. I make him master here, though he doesn't know it and could not tell you a moment ago how it came to be so. And when he thought I might go away with you, his only anxiety was, what should become of me? And to tempt me to stay, he offered me his strength for my defense, his industry for my livelihood, his dignity for my position, his... Oh, I am mixing up your beautiful cadences and spoiling them. Am I not, darling?
It's all true. Every word. What I am, you have made me. With the labor of your hands and the love of your heart. You are my wife, my mother, my sisters. You are the sum of all loving care to me.
Am I your mother and sisters, Eugene?
Oh, never. Out then into the night with me.
You're not going like that, Eugene.
I know the hour when it strikes. I am impatient to do what must be done.
Candida, don't let him do anything rash.
Oh, there's no fear. He has learned to live without happiness.
I no longer desire happiness. Life is nobler than that. Parson James, I give you my happiness with both hands. I love you because you have filled the heart of the woman I love. Goodbye.
One last word. How old are you, Eugene?
As old as the world now. This morning I was 18.
18. Will you, for my sake, make a little poem out of the two sentences I'm going to say to you? And will you promise to repeat it to yourself whenever you think of me?
Say the sentence.
When I am 30, she will be 45. When I am 60, she will be 75.
In 100 years, we shall be the same age. But I have a better secret than that in my heart. Let me go now. The night outside grows impatient.
Goodbye. James.
In Candida by George Bernard Shaw, the narrator was Connor Farrington. Miss Garnet was played by Deirdre O'Mara. The Reverend J.M. Morell by Aidan Grinnell. Lawrence Foster played Lexi, and Brendan Colwell played Burgess. Candida was played by Daphne Carroll, and Marchbanks by Jim Reed. Production was by Brian Munn.